I'm Laura Farrar. This is Capital and Scott. Today, we are talking about mystery snails and other invasive aquatic nuisances that are spreading around Arkansas. This spring, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission reported they found these mystery snails, most likely from Japan or China, in a couple of lakes around Hot Springs Village. They're not exactly sure where they came from, but people releasing the snails from household aquariums could be the culprit. Matt Horton is the aquatic nuisance species expert for the state's Game and Fish Commission. He joins me today to talk about these snails and other invasive species, like zebra mussels and alligator weed, and why they pose a threat to native wildlife in Arkansas. All right, so Matt, welcome to the show. When we first spoke, I think it was last week, you and your colleague were driving up to Missouri to look at these zebra mussels that were on some type of boat. And as I understand it, this is an invasive species in Arkansas. Can you just talk a little bit about what you were doing on that trip and what the concern was with these mussels?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going up to Missouri to inspect a large houseboat that was taken out of Bull Shoals Lake, and the owner was wanting to put it into Table Rock Lake. Well, the problem is the boat was encrusted with zebra mussels, which is an invasive species. They currently don't have zebra mussels in Table Rock Lake. We've had them in Bull Shoals Lake since around 2008. Zebra mussels are one of the worst invasive aquatic species in the United States. They cause a lot of damage to infrastructure. They can totally encrust any hard surface in the water, clog up pipes, attach themselves to boats, motors. Ecological impacts are they filter a lot of the nutrients out of the water and impact the food web and decrease productivity. That has a cascading effect on all of the other aquatic organisms in that system.
So this is one of a number of these invasive aquatic nuisances in Arkansas. What was the concern of them being, so they're not in Table Rock Lake yet, so you all were going to inspect to see if they were on this boat. What exactly, I'm just curious, what did you find out when you went up there?
Yeah, so the boat did have zebra mussels on it. It had been in the lake for a while. The zebra mussels had attached. Zebra mussels are prohibited in the state of Arkansas. They're one of our prohibited species, and that is to protect our resources and resources of our neighboring states from infestation. And so you're not allowed to possess or transport or import those species into our state. And because the boat is being moved away from that lake with zebra mussels on it, that becomes a violation. And so we need to make sure that that boat is properly cleaned and decontaminated to make sure before it goes into a new water body that it's not harboring these invasive species.
Do we know how they got into Arkansas to begin with?
They got into Arkansas probably traveling on boats, hitching a ride on either recreational boats, fishing boats, or, you know, transport boats, cargo ships coming up the Arkansas River. They originated up in the Great Lakes and made their way down the Mississippi River, and we've had them in the state for several decades.
So the conversation that we had planned to have today actually surrounded this story that's come out about snails. We all are calling them these mystery snails, yet another invasive aquatic species or nuisance in Arkansas. What is going on with these snails? What are the concerns with them?
Yeah, so they are actually called mystery snails. There's two main species we're concerned about, Japanese and Chinese mystery snails. Currently, the Chinese mystery snail is prohibited in the state of Arkansas. I suspect that the Japanese mystery snail may be in the future. They both pose similar threats. So to start off, the mystery snails are one of the most popular aquarium snails that you can find. They grow large, over 2 inches in length. They're cultured in a number of colors, so they're pretty. People like them in their aquariums because they help clean the algae, clean their plants, also in water gardens. But the problem is these snails are not native to the United States. They came over in the early, around 1910, 1911, from China and from Japan as a food source. People like to eat them. They're used for escargot, but they harbor a number of parasites, some of which can cause harm to human health, even causing meningitis if ingested. So we need to find out what parasites these snails are hosting. Are they hosting native parasites? Do they have non-native parasites that could pose a threat to our aquatic organisms here in the state? Also, they can affect the food web. They feed on detritus, which is organic material in the sediments, diatom, stuff like that. But they're very prolific, and if they become too abundant, then they can also reduce the overall productivity of a system, displace native species. And over in the Hot Springs Village, those lakes drain into the Middle Fork of the Saline River. And the Saline River system is a very, very important water body for our mussel species. And we have some threatened and endangered species of mussels in that river system that we don't know if they would be, but they could be impacted either directly or indirectly by these invasive snails.
So when were these snails first found? And my understanding is they were found in these lakes around the Hot Springs Village area. What happened?
We've had reports. We've had a report of mystery snails from Lake Bentonville a few years ago, but this is the first report that I've responded to since I started work as the ANS program coordinator last fall. Most likely, these snails were introduced into the Hot Springs Village lakes by someone dumping their aquarium pet. That's our assumption. We have no way to figure out where they came from. But, you know, a lot of people will take their aquarium pet and release them because they feel like, well, you know, it's my pet. I don't want to hurt it. I don't really have anything else to do, so let's just take it down to the boat ramp and let it go and it'll survive. Well, most aquarium species aren't going to survive in this environment that you release them into. They're not native to here. Either they can't survive because of climate change, it's different, temperatures, water chemistry, they won't do well. But some species will, and the ones that do that are invasive, and species that have the potential to be invasive, they grow really fast, so they can grow faster than native species and outcompete them. They're very prolific, a high reproductive capability, so they can reproduce either more often or more, produce more young than native species. You know, they're generalists. They don't require a real specific habitat to survive. They can survive in a wide range of habitat and environmental conditions. And species such as the mystery snails possess those characteristics, and that's what makes them invasive.
I mean, it seems innocent enough to put a snail from an aquarium into a lake and hope that it survives. But is it really possible that, you know, one or two snails from an aquarium could really reproduce that quickly and become a problem in a lake?
You know, these snails, they can produce several young. They reach maturity within a year, and they can live 5 to 7 years. So, you know, if someone had two snails in their aquarium, one was a male, one's a female, they could reproduce, and it would just take the introduction of a pregnant female to cause an infestation. So it could just take one. There's other species that, such as plants and other organisms that reproduce asexually, that only require one organism or a part of the organism to cause an infestation. So it doesn't take much.
So can you describe to people listening, when you've come across these snails in these lakes, are they easy to find? What exactly do you see? Where do you find them? What happens?
Yeah, so really, for a quick reference, if you're curious about more information about imagery for these mystery snails and background information on them and their impacts, you can visit our Game and Fish website, www.agfc.com/ANS, and that takes you to our ANS Aquatic Nuisance Species webpage, and we have species profiles, imagery, and information on all the invasive species we have. But these snails can be found in muddy substrate, so in anywhere from 3 to 12 feet of water. Even less than that, you find them up on the bank. Sometimes you will see them on aquatic vegetation, but for the most part, they're going to be in and around leaf litter or just in in the mud, and they may either be moving around on the surface of the mud or buried in the mud, because that's where they get their food. You're going to see them as the water temperature warms up in the springtime. So April, maybe late March is when they'll move up from deeper water into the shallows to where you can see them, and they'll remain there throughout the summer and into the late fall.
So they're in Lake Bentonville. And then how many lakes around the Hot Springs Village area? Just one?
We found them in Lake Granada and Estrella, so two, but we still need to do some more surveying to determine if they're in any of the other lakes and also in the Middle Fork of the Saline River.
So the concern is that they might be host to these parasites that impact other animals, even humans. Are there any other issues? I think you mentioned maybe they could impact other sort of ecosystems in rivers or whatnot. What else is the concern with these snails?
Those really are our primary concerns. Their ability to become abundant and impact the food web in whatever system they get in, displace native snail species, and also the parasites that they may be harboring.
So the broader issue of invasive aquatic nuisances. You said that you've been doing this job, or that this position has been around for what, 6 or 8 years at the Game and Fish Commission?
Yeah, we've had an aquatic nuisance species biologist for the past 6 years.
What has been going on with just this research area in Arkansas? Are you all finding more invasive species, whether it be animals or plants? How have things been developing?
So we have documented 37 aquatic nuisance species in the state of Arkansas. And these include, fish, mussels, snails, plants, mammals, birds, and even parasites and pathogens such as bacteria, virus, and fungus. And some of those, the ones that you can't see, are the most dangerous. We've had infectious pancreatic necrosis, it's called IPN, in our trout fisheries, and at the Mammoth Springs trout hatchery back in 2015 is when we first detected it, and it significantly impacted our ability to stock trout from that facility. It affects the survival of young salmonids or trout species. And so now we're doing a major renovation to the Mammoth Springs trout hatchery because it needed some renovation, but also to implement infrastructure that can help prevent that invasive virus from maintaining itself there at the hatchery.
How do you track or discover the more, sort of invisible, so to speak, invasive viruses or bacteria or whatnot that are, I guess, mostly in bodies of water or waterways? Mm-hmm. How does that even come on your radar screen?
There's several different ways. A lot of the time we find out about it from fish kills, either private people out fishing notice some dead fish, or fish kills on private farm ponds. Also, all of our aquaculture systems, our fish hatcheries that produce bait fish, ornamental fish, and food fish, go through extensive disease testing, and they're certified to make sure that they are disease-free. So we're constantly monitoring the production of those fish in our aquaculture systems, which is very important. And then if we get any reports of fish kills, or not just fish, but maybe amphibians, or reptiles or other organisms, then we'll respond and investigate those with other agencies to make sure and test and make sure that there's not diseases that we need to be concerned about.
It may seem like an obvious question, but are these diseases something that humans should be concerned about as well at this point?
Most of them aren't. Most of the parasites and diseases that are transmitted to our aquatic organisms are not harmful to humans, but they can have an impact on our ability to produce food fish, such as catfish. We're one of the top producers of catfish in the United States. We're also the number one producer of bait fish. We have the largest bait fish farm in the United States here in Arkansas. And so these diseases can drastically impact those private sectors of our state that are a huge part of our state economy.
Sure. And I would imagine potentially impact just the sort of hunting and fishing.
Absolutely.
Recreation.
So not only do these invasive aquatic species have the ability to impact aquatic ecosystems and other species, but they affect our agriculture, aquaculture, recreation, and tourism, all of which are our primary drivers for our state economy. So there's broad-reaching negative impacts that any one or a combination of these species can have.
We'll be right back with more Capital and Scott. Hi, this is Laura Farrar. The stories we dive into on Capital and Scott are just a fraction of the reporting the Democrat Gazette brings to readers every day. If you'd like to support our commitment to bringing you the latest in Arkansas news, sports, and entertainment, consider subscribing to the Democrat Gazette. With your subscription, you'll get a digital edition of the newspaper every morning, along with the latest news and updates delivered to you on an iPad provided at no extra cost. For just $34 a month, you'll get the same award-winning journalism you've come to expect from the Democrat Gazette, plus exclusive photo galleries, videos, articles, and digital extras like this podcast, all in the palm of your hand. To sign up today, call 1-800-482-1121 or visit us online at arkansasonline.com/subscribe. Welcome back to Capital and Scott. So let's talk about some other things that you all have found. And this is, to me, a really interesting subject area. And I think that people think, oh, you know, mystery snails and zebra mussels. It sounds kind of quirky and fun, but it's actually very serious.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So there are, you mentioned carp, other fish species, plant species. What else have you found here?
So some of our main concerns are our invasive carp species, primarily the silver carp, but there's four invasive carp species in the state. Silver carp are the species that most people have either heard about or have seen pictures of. They're the ones that jump out of the water and have been reported hitting boaters. So they can pose a threat to human health in that way. But the big head and silver carp are filter feeders. They can eat about 40% of their body weight per day in plankton, and so they have the ability to impact the food web in any system they get into and affect, in a short period of time, the health of game fish species and other fish. So we have an invasive carp removal program that just got started last fall. We have federal grant funding through the Department of Interior to remove invasive carp from our system to help protect waters in the Mississippi River Basin from invasive carp. We have an invasive carp biologist, Jimmy Barnett, and we have five part-time employees who run two boats 4 days a week to remove invasive carp from the Arkansas and the White Rivers and their tributaries and oxbows. And I think as of this week, they've removed between 37 and 38,000 pounds of invasive carp since last October.
Wow. How do they remove them?
Their primary means of removing invasive carp from these systems are gill nets, which is a net. The mesh looks similar to what you would see in a dip net, except larger, about four-inch holes. It's made out of monofilament. And the fish, you set these nets. Our biologists go out, and these carp crews, they go out and find the carp with side scan sonar. So they locate the fish first, and then they'll surround them with these nets and then try to corral them into the nets, either using their boats or an electrofishing boat, which is a boat that we have set up to put electricity into the water. And that can move them into those nets, and then they'll pull them up and move to another location.
And do these carp, what is the issue with this species in particular? Are they destroying sort of the plants or other fish or?
Yeah, they can have a broad effect on any aquatic system they get into, like what I said before, by affecting the food web. They feed on plankton, which is the foundation of a food web. So by filtering out those nutrients, that's the food that young fish need in early life stages to grow, in addition to your other bait fish that your larger game fish species feed on. That's their primary food source. So when you eliminate that, you affect the ability for other fish species to feed and grow. And that's a significant problem.
Is there anything more recently that you all have discovered? The snails seem to be, well, I don't know when they appeared in Lake Bentonville, but anything in like the past couple of years that's emerged that seems newer here?
The mystery snails are our newest invader. Before that, we have giant salvinia. And giant salvinia is probably one of our greatest threats right now. It is a floating aquatic fern. A small plant, very interesting. It's one of the fastest growing plants in the world. It can grow, it can double in mass every 2 to 3 days under ideal growing conditions. Louisiana and Texas spend millions of dollars a year just trying to control that one plant species. It floats on the surface of the water, it spreads quickly, so it can cover the surface of the water, which reduces light penetration and oxygen transfusion into the water, which makes it almost impossible for anything living underneath that. And it hinders boating access. This stuff can grow and pile up in mats that are up to 3 feet thick, and you can have 400 tons of organic material of these plants per acre. So they'll spread across the surface of the water and then just start stacking up on top of themselves. And because it grows so fast, when you're managing it, you have to be out there all the time applying herbicides to try to keep it from becoming too dense.
Where are you seeing this mostly in Arkansas?
We found it. It was first discovered in Smith Park Lake, way far down in southwest Arkansas, in December of 2017. Luckily, we were able to eradicate it from that water body. That's very rare for us to be able to do something like that, because it only takes one plant. It buds off of itself. So each individual plant that looks like a little leaf, maybe the size of your fingernail, just constantly buds off of itself. And if you don't kill every single one of those little plants, then it just takes one to start over. And then we found it in Lake Columbia, which is a very popular fishing lake down near Magnolia. It's also a water supply lake. It is still in that water body. It's also in Lake Erling. Lake Erling is owned by Agrid, and it is a privately owned lake, but available to the public. It has public access, very popular fishery. It currently has giant salvinia. It was also detected in Millwood Lake, which is a Corps of Engineers lake and also a water source for Texarkana and a lot of the surrounding area down there. We were able to eradicate it from that lake as well. It was found in 2020. So right now it's in two lakes, Lake Columbia and Lake Erling. And our focus is containing it in those water bodies and preventing it from spreading to new ones. So we're working with the managers of those water bodies to put containment booms around the public access areas to keep it from getting up to where it'll float up onto boat trailers and be taken away from those water bodies. In addition to, I'm trying to acquire boat cleaning stations that we could put at Lake Erling to provide boaters a free and convenient way to remove any giant salvinia that may get onto their boats, trailers, and motors.
It seems like a big task to track, monitor, manage everything that's going on. You said there are 36?
Yeah, 37 species.
37, yeah. Invasive aquatic species. Mm-hmm. What is it like to just do your job day in and day out?
Well, it's very interesting because I'm dealing with something different every day, it seems like. But, you know, a lot of my work is focused on prevention. So education, creating regulations, and figuring out ways to help our staff and the public decontaminate their equipment. You know, we're trying to push these national prevention campaign messaging, such as clean, drain, dry, you know, don't let it loose. That's for the aquarium trade. And so, you know, this messaging that we're trying to get out either through things like the podcast, me talking about it now, any articles that we publish, you'll notice that in, and as well as on our website, signs at public access areas. People need to know that there are easy ways for them to help prevent the spread of aquatic nuisance species. And the best way you can do that is by cleaning, pulling the plug on your boats, draining all the water out, making sure there's no water in your live wells and the ballast areas, bilge areas of your boat. Clean off any vegetation or debris that's on your boat, motor, and trailer, or your hunting and fishing equipment, and then let it dry for 5 days if you can before you go to a new water body. Doing those few simple things can make a huge difference in our ability to prevent these invasive species from getting into new water bodies and ruining people's favorite fishing hole or recreation area.
Invasive species have been obviously invasive for a long time. I mean, even a couple of years ago, we heard about the murder hornets that somehow made it over to Washington State, probably on a boat, or I'm not sure what the conclusion was with that. And trade historically has been a way in which, you know, animals have ended up on other continents, countries, and whatnot. Is that for the most part what you all think is happening? How are these things getting here? I mean, snails being released from aquariums are one thing, but I think when we talked before this interview, there's still an issue of even fish stores that sell, I guess, fish for pets are still importing these snails. And even that's, I think, illegal in Arkansas. But how are these other things getting here? Do you all have any idea?
Well, so there's many ways you can that invasive species can be introduced. There's three main pathways. The first are the most common, really, is unintentional introductions. And this is where these invasive species are hitching a ride on people's boats, motors, and trailers, hunting and fishing equipment, in the bilge tanks of transport boats, of cargo boats, and they're just being moved around. So that's why it's important for people to decontaminate and clean, drain, and dry their equipment before they move to a new water body. Then you have intentional stocking. So you have egocentric stocking of wildlife and plants because of a perceived benefit that they may have. Maybe someone knows that it's an invasive species, but they think that it's going to provide a benefit in a water body they like to use. So they can be stocked that way. And then, of course, release of bait fish, especially wild-caught bait. Your silver and bighead carp look very similar to our native bait fish species, gizzard and threadfin shad. And so you can have accidental stockings simply because people can't tell the difference between the species. Also, diseases can be in that water that you've collected your bait with and transported to a new water body. And then, of course, the release of aquarium pets and water garden contents. You know, someone dumping their, if they get an invasive plant like water hyacinth or giant salvinia or other invasive aquatic plants in their water garden, and it clogs up their water garden and they want to get rid of it, well, a lot of times they'll just go dump it into a water body, a pond or nearby water source. Well, that's introducing this invasive species that can spread all over. Also, you know, no one likes to kill their pet, and that's just, you know, the fact of it. And there's so many people that have aquariums. There's fish, there's snails, there's all kinds of cool organisms in aquariums. But the fact is, it's illegal to dump aquarium pets into the wild, release them. And there are other ways that you can humanely address your aquarium pet, such as rehoming. I mean, ask a family member, ask a neighbor, talk to your local school, science club, university, even the local zoo. They may have suggestions. Sometimes pet stores will take back pets that they have sold, that you have proof that you purchased from them. So look into rehoming these pets before you consider releasing them. And if you can't take care of it anymore and you need to, you just have to get rid of them and you can't find another home, you can also ask your vet for advice on how to humanely dispose of the organism.
That's interesting. I didn't know that would have such an impact in an aquarium on potentially the environment. But what role do you think that climate change is playing in terms of maybe even more sort of the plant species that we're starting to see here? I don't know if bodies of water are getting warmer in Arkansas. I grew up on Lake Hamilton, and in the summer now it's like bathwater. Maybe it's been that way for a while. But do you think that has any impact?
Yeah, as we have changes in our climate, then so will we have changes in our habitats and the ability of species either to have resiliency to these changes or to spread into water bodies where organisms that had specific temperature requirements are no longer there, and now these invasive species can easily come in, outcompete, and displace and overtake those ecosystems. So, yeah, there's always the potential for new invasive species to come into our state as environmental conditions change.
So I wanted to circle back to the zebra mussels. You all went up there. They were on the boat. What happened? You just removed them? What was the end of that story?
Well, our enforcement officers, we worked with our fish pathologist, our wildlife officers, and the biologist from the Missouri Department of Conservation. And we gave them instructions on how to properly clean. They had to remove all the zebra mussels using a heated pressure washer. the hot water will kill the mussels, and also the pressure washer removes them from the vessel. Any water that's left inside the hull of the boat or in some of the bilge lines, any water that they couldn't remove, they treated with chlorine. Chlorine will kill the zebra mussels and their larvae. Part of their life cycle is a larvae stage, and they're called veligers. And you can't really see them, but they could be in any water that's in a water body that has these zebra mussels when the water temperature is right. And so this time of the year, you could have zebra mussel veligers in the water. So just because you've removed everything you can see doesn't mean that they're gone. So any water that was left, they had to treat with chlorine. We went and spent an hour inspecting inside and out the boat. The owners did a great job of decontaminating that boat, and then we were able to sign off and give them permission to launch it into public waters.
Is there a lot of pressure on you all in terms of trying to make sure that, for example, these zebra mussels don't spread to other states? How do you coordinate with other states mm-hmm. in terms of just monitoring this and making sure they don't spread elsewhere?
So part of my job is to communicate on a regular basis with our neighboring states and other state conservation agencies, Fish and Wildlife Service, other agencies dealing with aquatic nuisance species to determine what potential threats we could have, what are new invasive species that we could get into Arkansas, and also let them know about new developments, new information that we find out either through research or tracking the distribution of our current aquatic nuisance species, sharing that with our neighboring states so they know what's coming and what pathways they could potentially be introduced into their state. Something that I'm working to develop right now is a dashboard. We have an aquatic nuisance species database. So one thing that we want people to do is report aquatic nuisance species that they see so we can respond to them. If it's a new species or a species we don't want into a water body, if we can detect it early enough, we may have the ability to eradicate it before it becomes established. And so people can report this on our website. There's an online reporting tool. They just need a picture, a GPS coordinate if possible, and then, you know, what water body it came from and some information, contact information. That comes directly to me. I can contact them and follow up however I need to. But we've collected over 1,800 reports for all these species. And this dashboard that's going to be rolled out onto our Game and Fish webpage will show the distribution. It's going to be a map that shows the distribution of all these reports. You'll be able to look at the information by species, by county, by drainage area, by water body. There'll be pre-made maps, and you can even print off your own maps. But this will be useful for people to see what invasive species are in water bodies they're in, and so they'll know what's been reported and what hasn't, so they'll know what to look for. And it's also going to be a great tool for other agencies and other states to monitor what's going on here in Arkansas.
So finally, what's, you know, a lot of people are out on lakes now, it's summer, and I would imagine people are going to be seeing these mystery snails. I suppose they shouldn't take them inside and have them for dinner and make escargot out of them.
No. And because you can't tell the difference between the Chinese and the Japanese mystery snails just by looking at them based on their morphology. We're sending them off for a genetic analysis so that we can determine exactly what species they are. Because the Chinese mystery snail is prohibited in the state of Arkansas, that means you can't possess them. So if you see them, don't pick them up, don't collect them, don't put them in a bucket and move them around or take them home and put them in an aquarium. Do not do that. It is illegal. But if you do see these mystery snails, please file a report on our webpage, or you can contact me directly. My contact information is on the Game and Fish ANS webpage.
What can we expect to hear next, do you think, about these snails? What are you all waiting to find out?
We collected several live snails from these water bodies and sent them to the Auburn Fish Disease Lab, the Auburn University Fish Disease Lab, and they've examined them for parasites, and we are waiting on the results of that. In addition, we've collected several individuals that we'll be sending to a couple of labs, one researcher here in Arkansas State University in Jonesboro, and then we're going to maybe send them off to a couple of other places for genetic analysis.
Well, we will have pictures of these snails online to go with this podcast and, of course, all the information that you've mentioned. And this has been really interesting. So thank you so much. And I guess everyone can keep an eye out for zebra mussels and mystery snails and carp, and go to your website and see what else is out there and report it to you if people see it.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about this, and encourage everybody to go check out our ANS webpage. Again, that's www.agfc.com/ANS. It's got all the information you need to know about aquatic nuisance species here in the state, and we're going to constantly be updating and adding new information to that moving forward.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
You bet.
For more information about invasive aquatic species in Arkansas, visit the Arkansas Game and Fish website. We will include links to resources in the description of the Capital and Scott podcast. And if you have a fish tank with snails, probably best not to set them free in any lakes. Thanks for listening. Try to stay cool, and we'll see you next week.